You might be turning in your Bibles to the book of Matthew in the 25th chapter. We're going to start there in just a moment. It's great to be here tonight. Appreciate the presence of everyone. We have several that are visiting with us and several of our own that made a special effort to get some of those here. So appreciate the effort on everyone's part. Appreciate everyone's presence, visitors and members alike. Hope we get an opportunity to speak with you if you are visiting with us, and we hope you get an opportunity to return. If you got any questions about anything we say or do here, we'd love to have an opportunity to talk about those with you also. But we're grateful for your presence, first and foremost. We hope to be seeing more of you in the future. When I was young, particularly about the time I was probably 14, and started doing things with my friends away from my parents, seemed like every time I walked away from my dad, he had this to say: remember who you are. And the first time I think I heard him say that, I kind of looked at him funny, like, what does that mean? And he let me know real quick that he said, and I still remember these words today, he said, "You're my son, and everything you do is a reflection of me. So whenever you're away, remember who you are." And that saying would follow me all through my teenage years, a lot more probably than I wanted it to. Matter of fact, still several years later, sometimes I still hear my dad in my ear saying, "Remember who you are." So it was an interesting way that he communicated to me. But, you know, he really could have put it like this, as the writer of Ecclesiastes does in Ecclesiastes in the 12th chapter and in verse 1, when he says, "Remember your Creator." Specifically, he says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." And I think there's several different ideas that portrays, but there's two main things that I want to talk about just briefly when I read those words, "Remember your Creator." And I've talked with our young people here in classes and so on and things like that, at this in great detail. What does this mean? Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And the first thing I want to suggest to you in Matthew chapter 25, and I want you to look at verse 31. In Matthew 25, verse 31, it says, "But when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on His right, 'Come, you who are blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" The first and most important reason we need to remember our Creator is this day right here that He talks about, that Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 25, is coming. There is going to be a day, and it might be in your youth, it might be in your old age, it might be when you're long since dead and gone from this earth, but there is going to be a day when He separates all the people that have ever lived on the world into two groups. And nothing's going to matter on that day except this one question that you see in Matthew chapter 25. That's the only thing that's going to matter. Are you a sheep? Or are you a goat? It's not going to matter if you're tall, short, skinny, overweight, black, white, red. And none of it's going to matter. How much money you made, rich, poor, lots of friends, no friends. You know, how many TVs were in your house. None of it's going to matter. The only thing that's going to matter is the answer to this question. Are you a sheep? Or are you a goat? It's the only thing that's going to matter. And when's that day going to come? Why is it so important for us to remember our Creator? Because this day is coming. Matter of fact, in all reality, this day could be today. It could be tomorrow. It could be this week. It could be thousands of years from now. But the day is coming. You can rest assured the day is coming. And I think that's one great reason. But another reason, and this is what I want us to really talk about tonight, the days of our youth are what shape our future. For our young people, I like to explain it like this. Every one of us is born or comes into this world with this book. Not this particular book, because this is just a songbook supplement. But a book like this. Every one of us is born, and if you can imagine this book being empty, there's nothing on the pages of this book. But each one of us has a book, and your book is personal to you. It doesn't have anything to do with anyone else. It's your book. And only you have anything to do with what is written down in this book. But every decision you make, and every day that you live, and every thought that you have, and every place that you decide to put yourself, and every friendship that you make, and every influence that you have, what's happening as you live your life is being recorded on this book. This book is literally shaping who you are. And what happens is tomorrow's page is affected by today and yesterday and last week. And decisions you make in the future are going to be affected by decisions that you made in the past. And consequences of your decisions that you made today, you won't see sometimes for years and years and years down the road, but you're writing this story that is your life. You're telling your story, you're writing your story, and it is shaping you as you go throughout your time here on this earth. And that's what is so important. This is what I try to stress to our kids so often. It's so important for them to remember their Creator, because when they make decisions, they're shaping who they are. They're molding themselves. Their minds are growing, and they're formulating into different people, and they're having different experiences because of the decisions they make, and those different experiences cause them to think this way or act this way or react this way or be this way, and all these things are a product of their experiences. The people they're around, the places that they go. It's so important for you to remember your Creator in the days of your youth, because those are the days that are going to define you. Those are the days that are going to define who you are before you leave this earth. So four ways I want us to talk about in particular that we should remember our Creator, or times that we should remember our Creator. The first thing I want you to notice is you have to remember your Creator when you choose your friends. And this is a biblical principle. You understand this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33, Paul says, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." In other words, you put yourself around bad influences, and what's going to happen is that's going to wear on you. Eventually, yeah, you're going to become like that. So it's so important when you choose your friends that you make wise decisions. And I guess one of the most prominent examples we can think about in the Bible is King Solomon. And you remember what drug his heart away from the Lord? All the foreign wives that he married, and trying to make all those women happy, and trying to satisfy them and their nationalities and their idols. And it drug him away from the Lord. Bad company corrupts good morals. And I'll tell you a story about, in particular from my life, about how this experience I can relate to. When I was a young boy, I was about 14, all I wanted to do was play basketball. In the summer, all my friends were playing football. So I would go to the gym because I wanted to work on my basketball game. And what I would find out when I got to the gym is no one was there. And my mom, she worked up at the school, so she would have to go work during the summer, and I would ride to work with her, and I would go to the gym to play ball. And nobody was ever there. Well, not far from the gym was the rec center, where people were always playing ball. So I would walk down to the rec center to try to find pickup games. Well, there's a group of guys that played at the rec center in Tullahoma, Tennessee. When I was 14 years old, there was a group of guys that played all day long. They were all in their 20s, and I think every one of them was a drug dealer. They didn't have jobs. They played ball, and they sold drugs. And I wanted to play ball, and that was the only place I could find a game. So that's where I went, because I wanted to play. And I remember being 14, out on that court with a bunch of guys that were 21, 22, 23, I remember the first time a bag of marijuana fell out of a guy's pocket onto the court. And I remember seeing that and like, wow, I never seen anything like that, right? So I'm like, oh my goodness, where am I? What is going on? I've stepped into another world. But after being around it and being around it and being around it, not long after, In fact, just a few short months, I remember sitting at a party around a campfire next to a guy smoking marijuana like it wasn't any big deal because I had been around it so much at that point, and I didn't even realize. And I wasn't doing it myself, but I can remember sitting there like it wasn't nothing, like we were playing checkers in my mind. And I remember thinking that. I remember that experience mentally thinking, I can't believe how far I've transitioned in my mind to be able to see that and to think it's no big deal. So choose your friends wisely. This is what you will find. Your friends are going to influence what you hear. They're going to influence what you see. Your friends are going to influence what you think. Your friends are going to influence how you handle situations. They're going to influence your attitudes towards your parents, towards teachers at school. You've probably seen examples of that. Your friends are going to influence what you believe. See, we put so much stock in our friendships. Those relationships are so important to us, as they should be. But the problem is when you have relationships that are that important to you, those people have influence over you as well. They're going to influence the movies you go to. There's going to be times when you say, you know, I mean, mom and dad said I really don't need to see that movie, but you know, this guy over here, you know, he's twisting my arm and I really don't want to let him down. I really don't want to disappoint him, and it's okay with his parents. So, you know, or maybe his parents don't even know, but we're going to sneak into this movie because he wants to see, you know, they're going to influence everything about you. Now, your parents are going to influence those things too. But there's going to come a day when your friends carry a whole lot more weight. And you'll find they'll influence what you think. You'll find that they influence the way you respond to adults. You ever see a group of kids where one kid just would act so completely out of character? I see it all the time as a teacher. One kid will act so out of character just because of who they're around. You put them in this group of four, you put them in this group of five, and they'll turn and say something to you so disrespectful. And you'd be like, man, that kid never talks to me like that. And it's just about who they're around. They're being influenced by their friends. Or they influence the things that we believe. They may influence what you believe about God. They may influence the fact that you believe in God. Your friends have a lot of power over everything you do, everything you think, everything you say. So it's important that you choose them wisely. The second thing I want you to notice, remember your Creator when you evaluate your status. We do that all the time as humans, right? We're constantly evaluating our status and how we measure up to other people, especially when we're a teenager, right? Your status is so important when you're a teenager. You know, who's got the new shoes and the most expensive phone and the nicest clothes and the prettiest girlfriend and the most athletic boyfriend and who's got this? And teenagers are constantly trying to see where they measure up and where they fit. You know, and they're always putting everybody in this pecking order, so to speak, and everybody knows who's at the top of the food chain, and everybody knows how it falls, and they're trying to fit in with this little group, and if I could just be friends with this person, then it would move me up in this, and it's all about status. In about 3 weeks, I'm going to have my basketball tryout for next year, and I've got 50 kids trying out for 8th grade basketball, and 50 kids trying out for 7th grade basketball, and the kids already know. They know from being around each other in PE, I could go to all 50 of those kids and hand them a piece of paper and say, here's the 50 names of people trying out, put them in order, 1 through 50. And just about every one of them will be the same. And they're always trying to measure each other up. They're always trying to make, you know, it's all about status. Whatever they're doing, it's all about status. Who's the biggest and the baddest and the best and the prettiest and got the most money and so on and so forth. They're always trying to find where they fit in. And they look at groups. You know, kids are cliquish. I said, well, that over there is the popular group and the athletic group and the wealthy group. And, you know, that group is the group that, you know, does this, whatever. You know, they're the most fun or they're the most, you know, they're the attractive people and I can't fit in with them and I can't fit in with this group. And they're always trying to fit in somewhere. How can I get in? I want to get in one of those groups. I got to be in a group. I got to be in the right group. And then once they get in that group, they say, I don't want to be in this group anymore. I want to be in that group over there. And it's all about being in groups. But I want you to see this. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And when we spend all our time trying to measure up and fit in and and be like everybody else and be accepted by these people and have these people want to be our friends. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, I think it's so interesting. We'll call this God's group, and I want you to see this beginning in verse 16. It says, if the ear says, because I'm not an eye, am I not part of the body? It is not for this reason any the less a part of the body. This is the first thing I want you to notice about God's group is everybody's important. It doesn't matter what part you are. It doesn't matter if you're an ear, an eye, a mouth, a piece of hair, or a toenail. It doesn't matter. Everyone's important. He says you're not any less part. Look at verse 17. He says, if the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? Everybody's important. Everybody's a part. Everybody's important. Everybody has a significant role. Then he skipped down to verse 25. It says, so that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. Everyone is united. See, there's already a group where you're accepted and where you belong and where somebody wants you and where you fit in. And it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you look like. You don't have to do something to fit in. You don't have to please somebody, or you don't have to be this person or think this way or dress this way or act this way or have this to be accepted. You're already accepted. It doesn't matter that you're unique in some way, because everyone's important. Everyone's significant. There's not any ifs. God's group doesn't have any ifs. God doesn't say, well, you know, if you know you had a little bit more money, you could be in my group. Or if you were a little bit better ball player, you could be in my group. Or if your girlfriend was a little bit prettier, you could be in my group. If your cell phone was a little bit newer, you could be in my group. There's no ifs. Everybody can be a part. And it doesn't take all the things that it takes sometimes for kids to be in these groups. I'm not ready for that yet. I apologize. Because sometimes what kids find out, they have to do things to get in their groups that just aren't right. You got to be a bully to be accepted by these kids. You got to drink alcohol to be accepted by these kids. You got to do drugs to be accepted. You got to have sex to be accepted. Whatever else it may be, it gets to a point as a teenager where it just becomes downright, if you're not participating in sin, you can't be a part of the group. And kids feel an immense amount of pressure to be accepted. And it just so happens at that same time that they're detaching from the adults in their life, and they need more acceptance from the kids in their life. And all these people are saying, you got to do this to be accepted. You got to start being rude. You got to start being disrespectful to adults. You got to start being willing to pick on other people and put them down. You got to start being willing to do all these types of things. Dress immodestly. Participate in things that are going to corrupt your mind. You've got to start doing these things because that's what the cool people do. That's what the accepted people do. That's what the people in our group do. And the whole time God's saying, I got a group for you right here. And you don't have to do any of those things. I don't want you to be a part of any of those things. So remember your Creator when you evaluate your social status. The third thing I want you to notice, remember when your Creator when you decide who you are. Teenagers get to be 16, and you know what they're bombarded with? What are you going to be? What are you going to do? What are you going to do when you grow up? It's like that's the only question adults know how to ask them. Like every time you see a kid, you see the kid at church, and you're like, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. What are you going to do when you grow up? We don't know what else to ask. We don't know how to communicate. We don't speak the same language. So we say, what are you going to do when you grow up? What do you want to be? Where are you going to go to school to learn what you want to be? And what they learn is that sometimes that's how we define ourselves. Who are you? Well, I'm a chemical engineer. I want to be a chemical engineer. I mean, no, that's not who you are. What you want to do does not define who you are. You're not defined by what you want to do. You're not defined by what circle you're in. You're not defined by what goals you seek to accomplish or your hobbies. You're not defined by what you have. You're not defined by anything else that anyone else would use to define you. None of these things are who you are. They're a part. They're a piece. They're not who you are. This is the only question that matters. How do you define yourself? No matter what else happens in your life, No matter what you decide to do, no matter where, as Dr. Seuss says, you know, the road takes you or whatever. I can't even remember the word. But no matter what happens, when you go on this journey, you write this story, no matter where it ends up, this is what matters. Just like Matthew 25. Are you a sheep or are you a goat? Are you a child of God or are you something else? Are you a child of God or are you not a child of God? Because it doesn't matter what else you are. You either are a child of God or you're not. And that's how we have to learn to teach our children to define themselves. And Philip did such a great job explaining that this last week. But it's so important that we teach our children this right here. That they define themselves as a child of God, a servant of God. That's how they see themselves. That's the role that they feel. They don't have to, it doesn't have to be anything else. Nothing else is going to define them. They have to learn to defeat the mentality that it's not cool to be a Christian. And that's what they're hit with at school. And folks, it doesn't matter where they go to school. It doesn't matter if they go to public schools, private schools, home school, Athens Bible, Madison Academy, it doesn't matter. And I've been at just about every single one. I've got experience in just about every single one of them between me and my wife. It's everywhere. Sin is everywhere. And there are children at every one of those schools telling your kids it's not cool to be a Christian. Even if it's just because that's what mom and dad want them to do. There's people telling them it's not cool. And they want to be cool. They want to be accepted. They want to fit in. It's not cool. When you're 17, it's not cool to not have sex. It's not cool to not drink. It's not cool to not do drugs. It's not cool to whatever. That's what they're bombarded with every single day. And we got to teach them to accept. It doesn't matter who thinks you're cool. It doesn't matter who thinks you're cool. It doesn't matter if this person over here thinks you're cool or doesn't or not. It doesn't matter if this group over here doesn't accept you. No matter how hard you think you want to be in that group, it doesn't matter. What matters is this right here. Are you a sheep or are you a goat? When the time comes, and that time could be right now. Jeff read this morning from Romans chapter 1, and just to emphasize some of the things in Romans chapter 1, in verse 28 to 32, and I just want to pick some of these out. I don't want to take the time to read the whole thing, but envy, deceit, gossip, slanderers, insolent, arrogant, boastful, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. You read that list, those words that are in red, and I skipped out, you know, some of the murders and strife and malice and so forth. But some of those words that are in red, those are the things that our teenagers deal with. Not that our adults don't, but those are things that our teenagers deal with. But look at what he says about those things. Those who practice such things are worthy of death. And he says they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. Those who practice such things are worthy of death. In Galatians chapter 5, turn over there with me. If you got your Bible handy, turn over to Galatians chapter 5, beginning in verse 16. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. But if you're led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now, the deeds of the flesh are evident. Watch this, youngsters, watch this. The deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will what? Not inherit the kingdom of God. There it is. Those are your goats right there. He says, let me put it all right there, plain and simple as I can put it for you. And all those things that you guys deal with every single day, it's right there. It's real simple. But in verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and evil desires. That's what I want you to see. Those who belong to Christ, child of God, belong to Christ. There's somewhere where you fit. And it doesn't matter who thinks it's not cool. It doesn't matter. Because there's a home for you. There's a home for you. The fourth thing I want you to notice, remember your Creator in every decision that you make. Because here's the thing, remembering your Creator and not remembering your Creator, it's going to affect everything you do. Everywhere you go, it doesn't matter if you're in the gym or on the ball field or in the hallways of school or with your friends at your house on Friday night or with your friends at their house on Friday night or at the movie theater or just driving down the road by yourself or in the locker room, fellas. You know, we could talk 45 minutes about locker room talk. It doesn't matter. It's every single place that you go to. Every single place that you go to. Whether or not you're going to remember your Creator, whether or not you're going to envision yourself as a child of God and seek to be a child of God, affects every single one of these places. And you guys are in these places every single day. All you guys are in these places every single day. And it's affected by all of that. It's affected by every aspect of your life. Matter of fact, remembering your Creator, this is what my dad was trying to get across to me when he says, remember who you are. He was trying to get across to me, everywhere you go, everything you do, remember you are representing me and my family. No matter where you are, who you're with, what you're doing is a reflection of me. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing. God says, it's a reflection of me. Remember your Creator. Everywhere you go, everything you do. And the thing is that sometimes we have a hard time grasping it. Sin is so accessible to you guys. It's so accessible. It's at your fingertips just about all day long, every single day. You can do whatever you want on that little device. All day, every day. It's on your television sets. It's in your music that you hear and the words that you hear that affect your mind and your way of thinking. Sitting in school, you see the young boy looking over at the girl, answered right. You notice it's not the other. The girl's not looking at the boy's paper. The boy's looking at the girl's paper like, what's she got down there for number 23? But that's the reality that you guys deal with. It's so accessible. Everywhere you go and everything you do, and you've got to learn to make those good decisions. Remember your Creator in all those moments. Even when you just pick up that cell phone, remember your Creator. It's that complex, yet that simple. Remember your Creator in all those moments. I often think about, you know, King David, and you're not familiar with his story, but the sin that he committed with Bathsheba, if you are familiar, how many times after that do you think David thought, man, I wish I never saw that woman. Man, I wish I never saw that woman. How many times do you think after Moses learned that he wasn't going to be able to enter the promised land, how many times do you think Moses thought, man, if I just hadn't struck that rock, and if I just hadn't had that moment of anger, that one moment of anger that I can't have back, and the consequences that I face as a result of that. But that's one reason that I'm going to go where I'm about to go. If you'll turn over to Luke chapter 15, and we've been studying some in the parables class the last couple of weeks about the prodigal son. And what I want you to notice about the prodigal son is so interesting to me. Because we're not going to take the time to read the story and talk about all of it, but there's so many things we can take out of that story. But when he gathered up all this wealth and he left home, how many friends do you think he had? When he rolled up into a new town and he was the new man on the scene and he had all this money and the nice clothes and everything, you know, was just to a T. How many friends do you think he had? I bet he had a bunch. I bet there was a lot of guys that wanted to be around him. When he was throwing that money around left and right, saying, you know, hey, look, I got money. We'll get some women over here. We'll get some wine over here. We'll do some of this, some of that. It don't matter. Whatever. Whatever y'all want to do, that's what we'll do. We're going to have a party. We're going to have a great time. Everybody come over to my house. How many friends do you think he had? I bet he had a bunch. But when he ended up in Luke chapter 15, when he ended up, let's see, in verse 14, it says, now he had spent everything, and a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. How many friends do you think he's got now? Probably not too many. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Looks like he's by himself, doesn't it? And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. Where were all those friends he was taking care of? They're gone now. They're gone now. This is the most important lesson I think you guys can see right here. And I'm telling you this from my own experience because I've been there, I've seen it, I've lived it. Okay? I've been there, I've seen it, I've lived it. When you make bad decisions, there's a lot of people that are going to want to make bad decisions with you. You'll have a lot of friends, but this is the three things I want you to remember. If you don't remember anything tonight, young people sitting over here, or sitting anywhere else, but there's a bunch of them over here. If you don't remember anything, I want you to remember these three things. The people that are with you because of the fact that you are living in sin or because of the fact that you are doing what is wrong, they are selfish, number one. Number two, they don't care about you no matter what you think. And number three, they're going to be judged too. They're going to have to answer the same question. Sheep or a goat? They're going to be judged just the same. And I'm telling you that because it's so important for you to understand throughout the rest of your life and everything that you do. Ladies, that young man that tells you he's different, that young man that tells you that he loves you, that young man that tells you if you love me, you would do it, that young man that tries to get you in the bedroom or in the back seat of a car or whatever, I promise you he's selfish. I promise you he does not care about you. He cares about one person. And I'm telling you right now, I promise you, number three, he's going to be judged too. He's going to be judged too. Fellas, that boy that tries to twist your arm and say, come on, it ain't going to hurt anything. We're just going to drink a little bit. You can pull it off. Go in the store and buy the alcohol. Go over there and buy the drugs. You can do it. You can drive even though you've been drinking. That guy that's going to try to persuade you to do that. 1, 2, 3, right there. I promise you, they're all true. Every single one of them. He's selfish. He don't care about you. And he's going to be judged too. And that goes for all your relationships. And that's what you got to understand. It goes for all your relationships. And when you got nothing, they ain't going to be there because of number one and number two. Ladies, when you're carrying his baby for 7 months, I promise you, he ain't going to look so cute. You understand? When you've made that mistake and you have to pay those consequences for the rest of your life and he's not there to help you out, he ain't going to look so cute. Young men, when you're like one of my best friends from high school, and somebody has to call me one morning when I was 19 years old, and I get a phone call and says, hey, man, one of my buddies, Jeff, calls me. He says, hey, man, did you hear about Jay? I said, no, what happened? He died last night. What? Alcohol poisoning. It's not going to be too cool then. It's not going to be too cool to be accepted at that point. And on number three, it's really not going to be cool. It's really not going to be cool because I promise you, when you're standing in that line waiting your turn and you're looking over your shoulder to find that person who twisted your arm into doing this and doing that, and you ain't going to be able to find them, and they're leaving you out there by yourself and they're out there by themselves, it's not going to matter then. It's not going to matter how much they influenced you. It's not going to matter all the things that they made you do. You're not going to be able to stand in front of God and say, I know you got me over here with the goats, but now it's his fault. It's her fault. It's that group's fault because I just wanted to be with that group. You're not going to be able to do it. You're not going to be able to do it. I want you to remember those three things. They're so important. Anybody that tries to get you to walk away from the way that this book instructs you to live is selfish. They don't care about you, and they're going to be judged for it. And you will too. But I tell you all of this to tell you that this little book right here, this little book right here that's got my name on it, is full of mistakes. It's full of mistakes. It's full of bad decisions. And it's full of choices that I can't have back. I can't have back. And I hope and I pray for forgiveness of those things, and I trust from what I read about God in the Scriptures that He has forgiven me of those things. But this is what I have to live with every day. these three things, and I want you to remember these three things too. I live with them every day. This is my reality. There's been time that I wasted. There's been a lot of it. There's been time that I wasted because I was making those bad decisions. There's been relationships that I've had in this life that I wasted. And there's been talents that God has blessed me with that I wasted. And that's my reality every single day. I deal with those things every single day. Those things are always in the back of my mind, no matter what. Wasted time, wasted relationships, wasted talent. Because I didn't remember my Creator. Or as my dad would say, I didn't remember who I was. So it's so important for you to make those decisions. This is what I know. I have to live with that. I have to live with all those choices and all those decisions and all the wrong that's suffered and all the things that I don't even know about. All the impacts that those decisions that I made had that I don't even know about, that I'll never know about. I have to live with that every single day. And I'm going to have to answer for it too. I'm going to have to answer for it. And that's tough. That's a hard pill to swallow. When you look back and you have regrets, that's a hard pill to swallow. And I'm not saying that to say that I don't have anything in my life today. I'm just saying that to say that I know so many things that I look back on decisions that I made and places where I've been and choices that, you know, that I made, and I wanted to fit in. I was in the same place you guys were. I wanted to be in this group or be in that group, be accepted by these people. I'm trying to find my way, and I'm following the wrong people at times, and so on and so forth, and that's what happens. But the point is, I have to live with it. I have to answer for it, and you will too. Remember your Creator. Remember your Creator. For one reason, you're writing a story. And I tell this to our kids all the time too. The decisions that you make, when you make a right decision today, it makes the next one easier. It doesn't mean you're never going to mess up. We're all going to mess up. We're going to trip. We're going to fall. We're going to stumble. There's times in my life where, thank goodness, that God sent the right person at the right time to pick me up and say, hey, you're going to get through this. I'm going to help you through this. But it's so important for us to understand we have got to remember our Creator in every decision, because our decisions affect our decisions. And there's men and there's women all over the world today in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s that are still dealing with the consequences from 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Their children are dealing with the consequences for decisions they made at 15, 16. Their grandchildren are dealing with the consequences from the decisions they made at 15, 16, 17, and it's sad. But it's true. So you're writing a story. And every time you make a right decision, and every time you do the right thing, you're making tomorrow's page a little bit easier. When you start making wrong decisions, you're making tomorrow's page a little bit harder, a little bit more difficult. I'm not saying you can't overcome it, but you're making it a little bit more difficult. But the last and final thing I want you to think about is remember your Creator, because there's a great day coming, and there's going to be a separation of the sheep and the goats, just like we read in Matthew chapter 25. So that day can come. That day could come today. Again, that day could come tomorrow. It could come this week. We got to be prepared for it, because when that day comes, it is the only thing that will matter. That group of people that you wanted to accept you, they can't do anything for you on that day. They're not going to be standing there with you. The consequences of your decisions will be the consequences of your decisions, not theirs. And that's the most important thing. But the beautiful thing is, all of us have an opportunity to make the choice to repent of our sins and to make our lives right. God offers that to every man. It doesn't matter who it is, tall, short, black, white, red, Indian, whatever. It doesn't matter. God offers it to every man and every woman that's ever lived on the face of this earth. And if you haven't accepted that, if you haven't made the decision to be buried in the water of baptism and to be raised again to newness of life, you're going to be standing with the goats. If you've made that decision in the past, but for some reason you've left the sheep and kind of wandered back over toward the goats, decided that's where you wanted to be, and you need to make amends for that. You need to get put back with the sheep. That's where the shepherd wants you to be. If either one of those is your case, if we can assist you in any way, please come forward while we stand and sing.